Hello, and welcome to episode 73 of the Story Hack Podcast. The Story Hack Podcast features action, adventure, and mystery stories, mostly from the public domain. Story Hack is also a print magazine which publishes new action and adventure stories in a wide variety of genres. Visit storyhack.com today for more information. Today, we will hear part 7 of Wanderers of the Wolf Moon by Nelson S. Bond.
Chapter 7. The truth of her statement was exhibited very soon, that very afternoon, in fact. The dim Titanian sun was settling toward the westward hilltops, and Greg was just putting the finishing touches to a crude grist mill he was rigging for the women, when there came the scrape of hesitant footsteps up the rocky pathway. Hannigan had been away since breakfast time, making a survey of the natural resources within easy distance of their cave. Greg thought it was the radio man returning. "Hi," he shouted over his shoulder without looking back. "Any luck? What did you find?" Then, as no voluble, profane, fantastic answer was forthcoming, he turned around. His eyes momentarily betrayed his astonishment. "Oh, hello, Andrews," he said. Bert Andrews shuffled uncomfortably. His gaze held a curious mixture of wistfulness, reluctance, and expectancy. He said in a voice that was a trifle too breathlessly nonchalant, "Hello, Malcolm. Just taking a little stroll, so I thought I might drop up and see how you're making out." He glanced about him, obviously impressed. "Not so bad," he said. "Not bad at all. That's the cave, I suppose. See, you have things pretty well straightened out. What's that?" Greg's gaze followed his nod to the crosswork which was suspended directly above the cave mouth, a latticework of steel, firmly wire-lashed, secured by a rope, the stretch of which dipped into the cave itself. "Barrier shield," explained Greg. "Hangs on a pulley. We can drop it from inside. In case of attack, you see. Slides down that groove into the channel cut in the ground, holds tight there." He grunted. "That's one of the reasons we don't have any honest-to-John furniture in our home. We had too many other important uses for the metal." "Clever," said Andrews. "Ingenious. I got to thinking over what you said this morning, Malcolm, after you left. You were right. For a group of civilized people, we let ourselves get into sorry shape." He rubbed his chin reflectively. Greg noticed for the first time that his face was no longer dark with beard, that though his clothes were still dirty, he had made an effort to straighten them, dust them. The skin of his face, though, was pink and sore, chafed. Greg said, "What in the world did you shave with, Bert, a crosscut saw?" Andrews said defensively, "The electric razor won't work. The dry cells are exhausted and we can't use DC without wasting fuel. There wasn't a honed blade aboard the skiff. I used my pocket knife. It," he confessed ruefully, "it wasn't very sharp." Greg said Hannigan mounted carborundum sheets on a lathe wheel and put edges on a couple steak knives for us. "I'll let you have one before you go back. Hey, there he is now. What's the story, Sparks?" Hannigan came into the clearing at a trot. He was excited. He said, "Sweet Christmas cow, Greg, you know what I run across. A what's this? Company." The eager, interested look fled from Bert Andrews' eyes. He said stiffly, I guess I'll be running along now, Malcolm. See you again." He turned, his shoulders very stiff, too stiff to be convincing. Greg glanced at him appraisingly, motioned the radio man to keep his mouth shut, called after the young Andrews. "Don't go yet, Bert. We're just getting ready for dinner." Dinner. The young man spun like a top. Then he recalled his dignity. "Oh, dinner. Why, I guess ours is almost ready, too. Bye. We'd be glad to have you stay," said Greg levelly, striving to keep the amusement out of his voice. "I think there's a roast tonight. Something that looks like a young suckling pig. Can't exactly tell, though, till we taste it. These Titanian animals are different. Then there's a salad and potatoes and beans, a fruit compote, and I think Tina baked a pie today." Andrew's eyes widened as his lips twitched. I wouldn't want to be any trouble," he said faintly. "No trouble at all," said Greg, then unable longer to restrain himself. "But of course if you think they'll be expecting you." "No, I'll stay," blurted Andrews hastily. "Thanks, I can wash up somewhere. Inside, ask Aunt Maud for soap, she's the custodian of that." Then, as the young man disappeared into the cave hurriedly, Greg grinned at Hannigan. "One," he said. "You want to hear about what I seen?" demanded the redhead. "Listen, it was terrific. Great big marsh full of the damnedest life forms and craziest vegetation anybody ever met up with. Hot, too, steamy like the grand marshes of Venus, only not quite as stinking." He stopped, annoyed. "One what? You ain't listening to a word I'm saying. Don't you want to hear? Later, Sparks, said Greg. Right now I'm wondering how long it will take the others to fall in line. It didn't take long. The Citadel of Stubbornness had been undermined the night of the attack. It toppled with Bert Andrews' friendly visit, from which, some time later, he staggered home glassy-eyed with an overdose of wild roast, hot vegetables, crisp greens and luscious fruits, succulent berry pie, and it crashed violently the next day. Bert Andrews brought his dad up the hill, presumably to confer with Malcolm on a future mutual defensive system. The two of them lingered for lunch, and after lunch old Jay, Foster, with the blunt directness which accounted for his success in Earth's business world, sat back, grunted comfortably, and said, "That's the first meal I've enjoyed since I was a pup in service. Malcolm, you win. I'm sick and tired of this squabbling and of our hand-to-mouth existence down there. Is there room for me in this cave of yours?" It was no moment for gloating triumph. Greg said, "Yes, sir. Then I'm moving in. And so is my wife. What do you want me to do?" Greg said, "Hannigan and I were planning to break ground for a small farm this afternoon, but this is more important. We'll go down with you and help you move up your personal things. How about," he hesitated briefly, "how about Crystal and Bredon?" "I don't know," said Jay Foster unhappily, "but if they are smart, they'll quit kicking against the pricks too." They were smart. When Andrews and his son, accompanied by Hannigan, Tommy and Greg, appeared at the skiff to move the Andrews property, when Andrews told them bluntly that he and Enid and Bert were casting their lot in with the cave dwellers, there was a moment of sultry silence, fraught with reluctance, anger, recrimination. Then Bredon bowed to the inevitable. Not with good grace, but with grudging agreement, he said, "Very well. If that's the way you want it, Mr. Andrews. If we're welcome up there, Malcolm." Greg said, "You are welcome, Bredon. I told you that a week ago," and promptly forgot Bredon and Bredon's surliness as he realized that Crystal, too, had been shamed into a recollection of her feminine duty to herself. Somewhere she had found cosmetics, and somehow she had managed to clean and press out a fawn-colored desert sunsuit. Once again, ash-blonde hair combed back to a shoulder-length veil of shimmering loveliness, pale golden skin fresh and creamy and fragrant beneath the sheer silk of her abbreviated costume. She was the glamorous, crystal-lovely Crystal of more leisured days. A woman at once lovely, challenging, and desirable. Thus the nation divided against itself was united. And thus began the second phase of the refugees' struggle to exist against staggering odds on the lonely, hostile moon of Saturn.
This is the end of episode 73. Thank you for listening. If you want to support the podcast, please visit storyhack.com and check out issues of the magazine or our other anthology publications. You'll be glad you did.